You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Chaz Ray Kreider. He's talking to me from Columbus, Ohio. Chaz, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation to participate in your program.
So let's talk about what you're working on right now. There's a lot of work and maybe your books that we could discuss, but what is it that you're working on at the moment in your studio?
Well, at this time, I'm beginning to do a series of self-published books. I have a large number of different bodies of work that have never been seen or seldom seen, so I'm trying to move them off the digital realm and put them into a hard copy format. It's mainly for my own personal library. I want to see the work in print. And then online, I make these available if anybody's interested. So it's a combination of my serving myself and making it available. And I've produced like maybe four of them over the last 6 months.
Yeah, so that's interesting.
Using an online service.
Which, do you mind me asking which online service you use?
I've tried a lot of them. I tried Mosaic. I tried Blurb, different ones. It's whoever can give me the best quality consistently. So I kind of shop it around and take my chances. Yes.
And so who have you found that's the best? Because that's always an issue for artists. Like, if you're going to produce
There's one that I use. It's called, I don't know really. I'll just spell it Zeno. Would that be Zeno? Zeno.com. They print on like photographic paper, and the reproductions are dead on to my files that I sent them. So I'm very pleased with their quality. It's just that the cost and the pricing of doing a self-publishing book is quite expensive. So there's no way I can actually mark them up when I sell them. But as I said earlier, I'm doing it for my own personal use and collection. Selling them on the side is just, if someone wants to spend the money, I'll take it. Yes.
Right, but the money isn't actually a profit for you the way it might be, because you publish books with Toshin and Goliath books and other traditional publishers. So I mean, in that case, I know books. I've also published books, more technical books, but they're books are never kind of a big win in terms of finance for the authors, but to do them on your own as someone who's already been published by publishers as prestigious as Toshin, your expectations isn't that you'll profit off this, but it's more a way of organizing bodies of work.
Yes, right. I'm just, as I said, moving it out of the digital realm. Like, I have so many images that have never been seen that, I'm trying to codify them, so to speak, for my own, personal satisfaction.
And would you like those to also be published so people can purchase those from a publisher like Toshin or another one, or you don't want them to go in that direction?
The publishing with a publisher that's going to print it in a certain volume and distribute it is the ideal, but it's a marketing concern for them. Is this work really going to appeal to their audience and their demographics? Generally, I've been lucky to publish a number of books, but generally I'm appealing to, what they're already sort of like. They have that sort of division, like Toshin has his sexy book division, and I, fell into that. But there's only so many times, plus the work gets a little more esoteric, and I'm not playing up to the fetish crowd or anything in particular. The work is more diversified, so I don't know if there's an audience for it on a larger scale.
Let's talk about that. I mean, as you're saying, in one way with Toshin, perhaps some of the prints, the photography you've been doing, it plays to a specific crowd that enjoys a certain kind of erotic art or fetishism. The bodies of work that you're self-publishing now and will continue to do, how do they differ from that? Because you're also kind of curating how your work is, your kind of output of work as seen, as opposed to being seen as, and correct me if I'm wrong, as a photographer who specializes in, you know, erotic art or fetish art.
I never really thought of myself as a fetish photographer. I was just making sexual imagery, and it got happened to be called Motel Fetish, just as a working title, and then it stuck. And surprisingly, that look kind of took off. And I had to, after a number of years, it sort of more or less became like a brand. You know, I could do this look, and it was meeting with sales and a certain amount of followers and profiting. But, you know, after a certain point, it no longer became a personal expression. I had to move away from it and work in other directions. So that's how that's evolved over time.
So to talk about it evolving over time, which is important, and maybe we should also go into a little more what the current work is that you want to present that's different than what's happened. There was, as you began early in your art career, were books the first kind of breakthrough for you that suddenly made your art take off?
Yeah.
and then perhaps, yeah, as you're saying, overbranded it in a certain direction. But yeah, if you can tell me, like, what was that first event where you went from a photographer who's making work like so many other artists to suddenly
Exactly kind of what happened. I, you know, as a photographer, in the beginning, I worked all the genres. You know, I started as a street photographer. I did conceptual portraits. I did it all. And then at one point, I started moving off the street into a studio where the work became more conceptual and more, more erotic or more sexual. And then I came up with this concept of that I would do this thing. I would shoot the models in a motel room, only because it was a way, and the room became a means of for the audience to suspend their disbelief. That being, we've all been in motel rooms. We know what that looks like. The background is established. So I used that as a locale throughout the Motel Fetish period. And the work is also heavily narrative. You know, it's this man that's going into this room with these women, and why he's there and why they're there. All those kind of questions are being raised. And it just so happened, I had a friend on the West Coast that worked for a magazine, and she published it. And the peculiar thing was she included my phone number. And the next thing I know, people were actually calling me, asking me about it. It just sort of like took off. You know, the wave was, I caught this wave. But after a while, this narrative thing just broke down. The movie in my head came to an end, and I started thinking about, you know, I don't want to do this particular style forever. And I said evolve, but actually it was more like I just let things mutate. I didn't really steer where I was going. I just knew I had to get out of the narrative and get out of that fixed locale of being in a defined motel space. So the work began to get more stripped down, you know, no narrative, no lamps, no carpet, no nothing. I just went in the complete opposite direction. And that's where I'm at today. I'm no longer doing heavily structured narrative concepts. It's just, yeah.
But you're still working with models that are women, and they're still mostly nude or erotic, you know, in
yeah,
context
yeah,
or
yes.
an approach?
Yeah, well, as I say, you know, a man's got to have a hobby, and that's mine. If you want to work with me in a semi-nude state, then, that's what I'm doing. But it's more, you know, more diversified. It's kind of hard to explain what it looks like verbally over the phone, but I can give you a try. One of the last things I did in my studio, which I gave up a couple of years ago, and now the whole world is my studio. I painted the floor white, and I painted in this corner, everything was white. And I began to shoot the models in relatively very minimal clothing, didn't know where it was going. And then one day I looked at him at the photos, and I thought, this kind of looks like an institution, from the turn of the last century. So I started directing my models to think of themselves in an asylum and act that out. So while it kind of has a narrative structure, it's completely minimal in that the floor is white, the wall is white, and the only thing that's in the set besides the model is like a metal chair. So it has a very kind of stark institutional look. But then it's pretty sexual, and it's pretty crazy. The models are allowed to, like, shake and move and do whatever they want. I didn't overly direct them. And I think that's pretty much what I would call the antithesis of that motel fetish thing where everything was carpeted and lamps and, like an interior space. This was just the complete opposite.
So when you're not directing them, I mean, they're familiar with your work and what you want, and these are often models that are fully nude. Are they kind of making up their own sort of performance or are they kind of playing to what they think you want?
I think they're playing to what they think I want, and as they do that, I'm maybe fine tuning them. Say, do this and move that direction, or I'm looking for their natural body language and their natural character. I say, if they have long hair, I'll shake your head and let your hair fly everywhere. And at a slow shutter speed, their body's really sharp and in focus, but their head hair is just like a big blur. It starts to suggest insanity and mental this and that. It's more psychological. Does that make any sense?
It makes sense. Yeah. That's good. I know it's hard to describe visual work on, in an audio interview.
They lay on the floor and act depressed and despondent. Maybe that was like a reflection of what I was personally feeling myself, because I had had a studio for 30 years and I was being forced out by raising higher rents, so I had to give it up. And I think that last thing I did was a kind of a cathartic, my own, coming to an end of sanity kind of moment, because I didn't know where I was going.
And before you said, I mean probably jokingly, but man's got to have a hobby, and this is yours.
Yeah.
But of course you're an artist, and I suppose all artists could say their work is a hobby, but usually don't frame it that way. This is what you do, unless this really is like a side gig and you have a full time job, which I should ask. I mean, do you have another job that's also helping to fund your practice?
No, I do not have another job. I do not. No, I'm, I have a very low overhead kind of situation. I'm not a consumer, so I just sort of get by. But that, every man has a hobby, has to have a hobby thing. It's just a kind of a joke and a way of like diffusing, the importance, the pretense of being, being a fine artist.
Right. And so.
It's a gag.
Yeah, that's fine. That makes sense. And to talk a little bit about the content of what you're doing, right? I mean, these are erotic images. As we're saying, women are often fully nude and in very suggestive positions. How do you find it's being received? Obviously, you're selling prints, as you can through your own site, and you have books out there, but. But what's the pushback on this, if there is any, in this age of Me Too and a new kind of feminism, new kinds of critiques of magazines like Playboy, which I've been reading about recently, they're kind of revamping their image and creating what they think is a new type of erotica, but at the same time, feminists hold to the point, or some do anyway, that that if there was equality among the sexes, this wouldn't be, you know, Playboy wouldn't exist, or erotic photographs wouldn't exist. I mean, they've of course existed since, you know, the beginning of photography. There's Weston and all kinds of people that have been using nudes. But this is 2018, and yours are even more explicit. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, I'm doing this essentially for myself. I don't necessarily, you know, think about audience and, you know, how it's going to be perceived. I might have felt like that or thought about that early on, but it's gotten to a point where I'm in a comfortable situation. People come to me. You know, I don't really solicit models at this time. I'm sort of lucky in that sense. So it's all, everybody is consensual. And I feel that I have a track record and a body of work that people know if they're going to work with me, they're going to get quality images. And the first thing I do with models is try to determine what their comfort zone is, what their boundaries are. I let them set their boundaries, and I respect them. So it can go anywhere, and it just depends on you know, who I'm working with. Or am I getting to the question, or am I drifting off?
You're answering the question. I'm also wondering, I mean, because when your books are coming out of the UK, and I'm thinking also about, because it's good that you're talking about how you're working with the models and how mm-hmm. they're setting boundaries and limits. But also, I mean, in terms of the audience, if and when you're having exhibits or from the books, do you get any kind of feedback from an audience in the United States or an audience in Europe that's different? I tend to think that the audience in the United States tends to be a little more prudish about this kind of thing. You know, we're in an age now where Facebook quickly takes down nudes, even if they're done in the 16th century in their paintings. You know, I mean, it's or their contemporary photography. That's, you know, or other
Well, you know, Tumblr. Tumblr is just, you know, taking down all sexual content images and no longer permitting it. So that was a good vehicle platform for me to, you know, put my images. And, I agree with you. Like, there's like some sort of, you know, puritanical thing that we're getting a backlash maybe at this time. But, you know, I'm very private. I don't really exhibit my work locally very much. I don't really, the work gets out of town, and that's enough for me. I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not going to, if I make a sexual imagery, I'm not necessarily going to call this fine art. It is what it is, and I let the audience or whoever's looking at it decide. I'm not going to parade out my most explicit work and then say, hey, isn't this, you know. That's why I'm interested in doing books. If you have a book, it's in the hands of somebody that's going to be interested and sympathetic to it, as opposed to saying doing a public exhibition where anybody can walk in, and you know, you don't really have much control over of the audience or the people that's, you know, that aren't necessarily going to respond to it in a positive manner. So I hold back considerably, especially on the local scene. And I've been fortunate with the books to get some, you know, action in Europe. I'm doing a show next spring in Paris, and I'm looking forward to that because that's like, you know, I can show the work and not have to have too much concern about it.
Because I'm not kind of concerned about it because of the way a country like France and in particular Paris will see this, as opposed to even a city like New York, right?
Well, let's say it's like this, locally here, you know, and maybe everywhere, people want to identify the photographer with the images, you know, like, whoa, that guy's really into some weird shit, you know what I'm saying? But,
right.
You know, I'm doing something, you know, that's personal, but yet you try to strive for a certain kind of universality. But I don't want to be too identified with it here in town. I just rather kind of keep a low profile not get too, you know, not drag it out.
For sure, no, that makes sense.
In other words, I don't want myself to become vulnerable to the, you know, the political end of things. So I let the work seep out through other channels that aren't necessarily directed or aren't, you know, they aren't about me. It's about the work. And that's the nice thing about doing things in Europe is that the work gets out and people see it independent of me, and the personality aspect of it, if that makes any sense.
It does make sense, yeah, absolutely. And to talk about some of the things that you've done, there's, and I imagine these prints keep selling, but you've worked with a lot of models, but kind of most notoriously, you've also worked with Dita Von Teese, right, who is...
I had that honor, yes. You know, that was like in the late 90s. Dita had really taken off. She was about 26 the first time I met her and worked with her in L.A. She was just, you know, still modeling, doing, you know, she had a cult following, but you could tell that she was charismatic and she, you know, was going to go. So I met her early on before she actually became the status and the celebrity that she is now. She was very nice to me. We worked, you know, I think 3 or 4 times over a 2-year period in different cities. So it was like luck and timing that I was introduced to her. I was working for a magazine in L.A., and they booked her, and so, hey, it worked out.
Right. And and so I like the way you've talked about, you know, the fact that you've been able to survive off your work, but also keep a certain amount of privacy about your work so that, it's not associated with, I don't know, the local community or what people think of you who don't understand perhaps the history of photography or erotic art or a number of things.
I mean, I have my supporters locally here and, you know, I have my detractors like every other artist. So, you know, it's fine. I'm just, you know, like I said, I just kind of like being underground a little bit on the local scene.
And you so know, let's talk a little, so the supporters, of course, are collectors and friends. Can I ask who are the detractors? Not, you don't have to name them, but how do you define that and what does that mean?
Well, I guess I'm just using that as in general. I'm sure there are people that, you know, disapprove of the aspects of, you know, perceive the work as being maybe, you know, exploitation or anti this or anti that. And occasionally I get a little bit of that, but like I said, I don't give them much opportunity to directly confront me.
Well, and I mean, you're getting an opportunity now in a sense, and part of, to me, what sticks out from what you're saying is the idea that when you're working with models, not only do they, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but largely come to you to ask to be part of your art, to be photographed, but
right.
Also you're not directing them and making them do anything that's uncomfortable. They set the boundaries, so... On one
right.
level, that sets up a certain, you know, that sets you apart from, let's say, other photographers, who are seen as predatory. I don't know why I can't think of the name of the guy that's photographed all those models.
I know who you mean. What's his name? He got some backlash. Yes.
Yeah, he got some backlash, and his work. I remember seeing, you know, a first show of his, and I don't know why we can't think of his name, but that's all right. You know, where, yeah, it was kind of extreme, you know, what he was doing or much more, you could say, explicit
mm-hmm.
than what you were doing with, you know, ejaculate coming out of people's mouths or, you know, all kinds of stuff that was kind of like, you know, I remember when I first saw that in the gallery, it was definitely something that's not what you'd normally see.
Right. I don't believe in, you know, that kind of a confrontation. That, you know, that word, you know, the whole notion that art is supposed to be challenging, you know, it's confrontational or something, maybe on some level in some ways, but, you know, I don't know. For example, I dislike being in like group erotic shows because most of the work I don't find erotic. You know, I think my work has a certain eroticism to them, and I'm content and satisfied with that. But you know, in general, it's a theme that, as you know, as a cluster, I try to avoid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And the name we weren't coming up with was Terry Richardson, of course. Right.
Yeah, that's who you were referring to. Yeah, Terry.
And yeah, that makes sense. What you're just saying. So let me ask you this before we go. Is there anything you want to say? There'll be links in here to your website, online, different variety of listeners, artists as well as curators are looking at this. Is there a show coming up or anything else you want to plug or say before I ask you the last question?
I would say, you know, I have my website, motelfetish.com, which is kind of the classic motel work. You know, I think that motel thing stops around, you know, 2010. I think my Instagram has a good variety of old and new work, and you know, due to Instagram, it's relatively safe. So you know, Chaz Ray at Instagram is who I am. That's a good, you know, portfolio of work. Like I said, I would normally send people to Tumblr, but I closed my account yesterday just because I didn't want to have to stick around and have to, you know, deal with it.
Right, and that just happened with Tumblr in the last week that they decided they're removing all, I don't know, how do they phrase it, all explicit imagery of any kind.
Yeah, all
site,
adult
right?
content or whatever. And it was, I had more sexual imagery there, but still I held back, you know, certain kind of explicit things, you know, that, you know, I just don't want to, you know, because I know there's, you know, fine art people that are looking at it, and if it's too far out or something, I'm trying to gauge the work, how it might be perceived in a wider, you know, in a wider world. So that's
right,
the thing
which
I'm
is,
coming
which,
back
which,
to
yeah,
is,
and it, yeah, yeah,
are
but
these
go
small
on,
books
think about
that I'm self-publishing, I can put whatever I want in these books, and, you know, people, you know, a smaller audience will see them, but it'll be a more of a cognoscente people that, you know, that know and will appreciate it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so let me ask you what you're reading at the moment, the question I ask everybody at the end.
Let's see. I am reading probably on my nightstand, for reading it for about the fifth time, is William Burroughs, The Western Man. It's one of my favorite books. I consider myself a William Burroughs student. He's very influential in my work. The other thing I got on the stand is something called Surrealist Lives. It's a little biographical information on the Surrealists from the turn of the last century up through 1945 or something like that, which, you know, the Surrealists play an important role in my work and a great influence. So those are the two right off the top of my head I can recall are in there on the nightstand.
And just to talk about, we didn't mention that, but the Surrealists play a large role in your work because of how you're you're approaching imagery essentially and working with models.
Yes, I can give you a couple of quick examples. When I started doing the motel fetish thing, models were seen like under tables, standing on chairs. You know, I tried to put them in a strange juxtaposition to what one would normally think they would encounter, you know, a nude or a semi-nude woman. So that was kind of a influence from surrealism. In other words, if somebody was bound up tight or something, to me that could be interpreted in a surreal way because you don't expect to come into a room and then there'd be somebody in a corner, you know, in some sort of bondage situation, predicament of some sort that's, you know, out of the norm. So I was approaching it from, an historical surrealist aspect, but trying to make it utterly contemporary at the same time.
Chaz, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today and wish you great success for the rest of your work. Thank you.
Well, Bernard, I appreciate, again, the airtime you're giving me, and I thought your questions were, interviews is only good as the questions, and your questions were very good, so I appreciate it.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.